Welcome to a new episode of PMCA Research Chat. I'm your host and PMCA Research Committee Chair, Eric Schmoyer from Barry-Calvo. Our objective is to inform and educate our listeners on current and previous Research Committee-funded topics and personalities. Please subscribe and like us on your podcast service. Check us out at PMCA.com, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Before we start, just a bit about the PMCA Research Committee. PMC research had its beginnings in the spring of 1947, as conceptualized by Hans Dressel and Rudolf Kreckel. Dressel, a born salesman and traveler, having a technical background, promoted and guided the PMCA research program, upon which the production conference evolved and continues to present day. The original research project was established at Lehigh University. The program originally planned to study methods to improve the shelf life of chocolate and confectionery. At that time, the research committee determined the most significant problem was shelf life, particularly the fat bloom which occurred on chocolate coatings so widely used on confectionery. More significant was the lack of knowledge as to the specific mechanism which caused the fat bloom, or even the tempering conditions which minimized it. This work was presented at the second annual production conference in 1948 at F&M College. At the time, Dressel persuaded William Duck to become PMCA research director at F&M, and we continue to this day. Today, we thought we would try something a bit different. We are going to be chatting with two legends of modern-day confections in a roundtable discussion. Doug Larian, PhD, is a senior director retired of product development at the Hershey Company. Doug was senior director, U.S. core chocolate product development of the Hershey Company, where he was responsible for setting the scientific strategy for the core chocolate department and managing the development of new products for the Hershey's, Kisses, and Reese's brands. Larian joined Hershey as a senior scientist in 1978. During his 31-year career with Hershey, he held the positions of senior scientist, manager, ingredients research, senior manager, grocery product developer, director, product development, and senior director, product development. A native of Beaver, PA, he attended Westminster College, where he earned a bachelor's degree in biology in 1972. He then attended the Pennsylvania State University and earned a master's degree in 1974 and a doctorate in 1978 in the Department of Food Science. An integral part of his doctoral studies involved 16 months studying cocoa in Brazil. Larian represented the Hershey Company on the board of directors of the Pennsylvania Manufacturing Confectioners Association and is past chairman of the organization. He also is a member of the Institute of Food Technologists. He is occasionally an adjunct professor of culinary arts at Kaiser University in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. Larian and his wife, Judy, split their time between Lakewood Ranch, Florida and Erie, PA. Also joining us is Adrian Timms. Adrian is an assistant teaching professor, agribusiness management at the Pennsylvania State University. He teaches undergrad courses in strategic management, business and innovation topics. Adrian had technical and consumer business roles in all aspects of innovation with the Hershey Company, with Cadbury in the USA and in the UK, working with familiar brands in several confectionery, snack, and food product categories. After Hershey, he was senior director, confections for Chew LLC, where his team developed products for global food company clients. Then, as an independent consultant, he provided innovation strategy and technical consulting services to startups and small to large companies before commencing his teaching career with Penn State. Adrian's academic background includes Bachelor of Science Honors in Food Science at the University of Leeds, UK, and a Master's in Food Marketing at St. Joe's, Philadelphia, PA. A 2018 inductee to Candy Hall of Fame for his services to the confectionery industry, Adrian has a long affiliation with PMCA. He is a past chairman of the research committee, past president and chairman of the association. He has most recently been chairman of the long-range planning and still serves on marketing and other committees. Gentlemen, now we see where you find yourselves today. How is retirement?
You go ahead, Doug. You're the one that's retired.
Yeah, my retirement's been very good. I've been playing some golf until COVID hit. I was pretty active in two organizations. One was the Selby Botanical Gardens. I do some work for them on a computer database of plants that they've collected around the world. And we're doing a geolocation project, so to get latitude and longitude coordinates of where these plants were collected. So that was kind of fun. It gave me an opportunity to revisit some of the areas of Brazil that I had visited because they collected lots and lots of orchids in Brazil. And then I've learned a bit about Costa Rica and Colombia, geolocating samples from there. I was also active with a organization called the Southeast Guide Dogs. They train dogs to be seeing eye dogs, as well as bomb sniffing, PTSD therapy dogs, a variety of careers for these dogs. And that's local to my Lakewood Ranch home. And so that kept me very busy for the past year. Both of those opportunities more or less went away. I was able to do some of the Selby Garden stuff remotely, but the guide dog organization had to suspend all their volunteer activities. So I'm looking forward to the future when I can get back to doing some of those kinds of things.
Adrian, I fear, like me, you're never going to be retired completely.
I am sure that retirement is going to be a lot of fun when I eventually get to it. Right now, I'm spending my time, because of the pandemic shutdown, I'm teaching classes by Zoom as well as online classes. So that's fun. But in the fall, I will actually be in the classroom with face-to-face classes. So, but in the meantime, I am snowed under with midterm papers and things like that. And so it is nonstop. That and still doing a little bit of winemaking on the side. At least there's some hobby aspect to it as well.
Doug, you were chair 82 to 85 and then 92 to 94. And Adrian was 98 to 2005. So you guys have been in this way longer than me, and I've been in a long time.
To my knowledge, Doug is the only one that's done an encore performance.
Yeah, a glutton for punishment.
Doug, let's start with you since you were the earlier chair. How'd you get involved in PMCA and how'd that evolve into research?
I got involved with PMCA probably back when I was a student at Penn State because I was sponsored by the Chocolate Manufacturers Association. But at the same time, there was a PMCA research project at Penn State. So I was well aware of the organization and I think perhaps had attended one of the production conferences while I was still a student. But soon after I joined Hershey, Larry Campbell asked me to be involved with the research committee, probably in 1979 or 1980s. I started with Hershey in June of 78. So almost my whole career at Hershey, I was involved with PMCA in some fashion. But I got involved in the research committee back when Jay Musser was the chairman, and he ran the organization basically from his home. He lived in Mount Joy, and his wife was the secretary for the organization. They would have meetings in Mount Joy periodically, and then occasionally we would drive to Penn State to review the program there. And that was a nice opportunity for me because since I was a young guy and had access to a company car, Elwood Myers, who was retired from Hershey, and Rodney Welsh, who was retired from Wilbur, would come to Hershey and I would drive to Penn State. And often Al Miklos would come over and the four of us would drive up to Penn State, review the research program. So that gave me an opportunity to spend a couple of hours with legends of the industry, titans of the industry, and pick their brains and just learn from conversation about what had gone on in the past and learned a lot about the history of PMCA through that opportunity. So I was involved with the research committee for a while. Jay Musser sadly died very unexpectedly, and they were looking for someone to take over the program. And I was asked to do so and was willing to take it on. So got kind of thrown into a leadership role very early in my career. I found that to be useful, very useful as a way to become much more involved with the total industry instead of just my role at Hershey.
What I find interesting is the company I work for, if something kind of grabs my interest in the research committee, I can float it internally as well and see where it goes. You know, if something's bugging me about maybe something needs to be looked into with chocolate, whatever. Do you find yourself going the same way at the same time?
We had a few things that came up that we further researched at Hershey. Didn't really want to try to steal any thunder from the research programs. So I was trying to be pretty careful about that. we would let the researchers evolve and learn, because one of the key aspects in from my perspective of the research sponsorship program was to train students to become good scientists and then hopefully join the industry. So we didn't want to take away from their research programs, but we found some things that were interesting and we would follow up on them.
And you returned after Morris Jeffries did his stint?
Yes, and again, I was kind of conscripted. They were looking around trying to find somebody who would do it, and it was a little bit of a struggle to get folks to commit, because it was somewhat time consuming being involved with recruiting new sponsors, the financial aspect of trying to keep enough money coming in to fund these projects, and they were becoming more expensive. So it was hard to get somebody to commit to doing that on top of their paid job, but I was willing to give it a try. So I came back on and did it.
You said something interesting right there, sponsors. Can you define that? Because in today's parlance at PMCA, when somebody says sponsorship program, they're thinking somebody to invest as a corporate type donor. And I'm assuming that wasn't the same thing back then.
No, PMCA Research was a separate entity affiliated with PMCA, and it was separately funded by a number of companies who were willing to invest in the research program.
Wow.
So it was a separate payment every year for maybe a dozen companies or thereabouts at the beginning. And then as the industry consolidated, it became fewer and fewer companies, to the point where it finally had to dissolve. It was down to just a few. And that became the problem. It was hard to convince big companies to sponsor this research because it wasn't independently directed by them. It wasn't necessarily something that they were immediately interested in. It was much more basic research oriented. And so it fell out of favor from a separate payment model.
Doug, if I remember right, to be a research sponsor, the company had to also to be a PMCA member first, right?
Yes. Yeah, so they were paying twice. And PMCA's dues were pretty modest. The research dues were significantly more, as I recall.
But going back through the archives, the benefits reaped from those particular projects were pretty broad-reaching as far as applications go. I noticed that the first one was on Fat Bloom before anybody had even considered that back in 1947. But it seems now we're doing things that are more specialized, as opposed to back then it had, like I said, a more broad-based application to the membership effect.
I noticed that from the research that I did for the Centennial book, the research on PMCA. And also there was a period of time where I and another were trying to go through all of the interim project reports and so forth from PMCA research projects going way back to the late 1940s, so that we could try and put that together as something usable as a review, which, by the way, is done quite well with folks like Bill Duck. Did a good job of reviewing a lot of that, and that gave presentations on that, which is in the production conference proceedings. But anyway, the topics that were being pursued were things like the basics of aeration of marshmallows and what kinds of whipping aids were suitable and why were they suitable, as well as this whole thing about Fat Bloom, where really the questions were about what actually is Fat Bloom, because there were a lot of competing hypotheses. And so they were doing research to try and analyze the composition of the fat at the surface and things like that. Obviously, we know a lot more about that now, but bears testimony to the idea that in those days, there was a lot of basic questions that needed to be asked and answered, for which the entire industry was interested. And now the basic research is much more a platform for proprietary research. And I think that ties in with the trend that Doug was intimating as well.
Yeah. While we're on you, Mr. Timms, how long were you involved? How did you get involved? I know, I'm assuming you took over right after John Urbanski retired.
I did. My experience is another one which reminds us all, never underestimate the synergy of AACT and PMCA and CMA and so forth. I had originally been conscripted to give a talk, a paper on scale-up of fondant for AACT back in the days when the annual technical seminar was in Callaway Gardens.
Callaway Gardens.
My boss had kind of volunteered me to do that. So I thought that was it, but I'd started attending the pre-MCA production conference around the mid-90s when it was being held on the campus of Franklin and Marshall in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And so that was a fun event. I didn't really get involved in a committee sense until I was conscripted by the press gang of three people, one of which was Doug. Yeah. Another was my boss at the time, or had just been my boss, was Morris Jeffery. And then the other person was Frank Smullen, who was a consultant to the industry. And I'd been working with him as I transferred from Cadbury to Hershey. My first project basically was relocating manufacturing lines for York Peppermint Patty. And Frank got involved working alongside me on doing that. I think it was probably his idea to get the three of them to basically to say, you know, you really ought to be on the research committee. And I was given the initial task of taking over the research notes publication, which I duly killed. Well, the issue there was that it was to highlight papers that had been given at conferences and so forth recently that would be of general interest to the research membership. And as such, it was a very good thing. At the time, it was starting to get superseded by other publications. But the other thing was that there was a long lead time because you had to write to not only the author, but also the publisher of whatever proceedings and so forth that the paper was in order to get permission to reprint their article. And that was taking like up to a year or more in some cases. And it just made it impractical. So we looked for other ways to do that. Basically, we sort of had a little committee within the research committee to try and figure out, you know, the situation analysis, if you will, as to where we were because of the decline of the sponsorship model that Doug referred to. Kirk Keeley and I, Kirk was working for Mars at the time. He subsequently went to work for Pepsi. Now he's at the University of Georgia, I think it is. But he and I were the ones that kind of pulled together the rest of the committee in terms of doing that situation analysis and to say, what should it be going forward? How can we redefine the research program? And it was based on that that we then took that to the PMCA board, who enthusiastically endorsed it. And so that was it. And so it came down to, well, who's going to lead this? And I guess I didn't look down at my shoes early enough.
So that's interesting because we're, as you know, going through a reinvention kind of, but it's been about 20 years. So I guess we were due.
The model did work, but, you know, for the various things that we've talked about already in terms of the evolution of how confectionery research has gone, even at the university level, that's one of the factors, but also the rising cost that the university departments face. And I think also what's happened over the decades is particularly land-grant universities like Penn State, they are under increasing pressure to make sure that all of the funding that they receive is properly accounted and so forth. And they're under a lot of pressure to make sure that any research that they're doing also gets applied what they refer to as facilities and administration, which is basically the overhead fees. And at some universities, that can be as much as 50% of the cost of what goes onto the research. So PMCA has strived to not have that as part of its model. And that's why it stayed with the grant in aid model, which only partially covers what the university needs to do the projects. As such, because it's essentially a gift, you can't necessarily mandate the kinds of reciprocal reporting and so forth and exclusivity of reporting that perhaps were understood years ago. And so that made it a little bit more difficult as well.
It's interesting, I mean, even with AACT, working with the scholarships, how every brief is written differently for each institution, depending on what the objective is, who the principals are, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. I will say also, when that time at the end of the 90s, when we kind of relooked at what the mission was for the research program, the underlying theme of it was essentially, it was a way to attract the best new talent into the industry. And so the students were actually as much or more of what the target was in terms of it making available to the industry, as opposed to the research itself. And so through the fellowship project that was set up as an endowment, that always assures good quality students. And so what we were trying to do with the grant and aid projects as well was to make sure that through those projects, we had good students that instead of researching ice cream or potato chips or what have you, that they were actually researching confections. And that then introduced them to the industry, and the industry got sight of them. And almost without exception, those students got hired into the industry and became leaders of PMCA, by the way.
I totally agree that my emphasis as, you know, a chairman was basically, let's make sure that we've got some good students coming along, that we expose them to others. And I think out of that grew our mentorship program, our student involvement, student outreach program. A number of those things currently do had their basis on our research programs and our goal to make sure that we had new talent coming forward. I think that was a very important part of everything we did.
It's very interesting, that interaction between this grant and aid recipient fellowship committee, because as long as I've been involved, it's always been open, honest, and helpful. I mean, the students are more than grateful for the qualified personnel on the committee, and the committee is more than happy to assist in any way they possibly can. And there's such a interesting array of topics we've covered, at least since I've been there in the early 2000s.
We've had a good run of research programs throughout the history of PMCA. I think PMCA at one point in time had employees that did research. Bill Duck was the main one who did that. And then it evolved to university-based research and continues to be that. So I think everyone in the industry has been very willing to support our students and help them in any way they could. I certainly noticed that when I was a student. I would meet every 6 months with the CMA research committee and got to know the various vice presidents of research in that way. And then eventually, that's how I ended up at Hershey. It was going to either be Hershey, Mars, or Nestle. And Hershey had an opening and they hired me. So it worked out well for me. And I think it probably has worked out real well for others as well. I think that's an important part of our overall mission as an organization.
I don't know how plugged in you guys are to the mists of history at PMCA, but was the research committee as envisioned by Hans back in 1947 totally new thing? Or you referenced the CMA research committee. Was it predicated on something like that? Or was this something completely new, original for this kind of organization?
Well, in fact, each industry association, NCA had a research committee, CMA did. So what happened was there was a consolidation going on. And there were, throughout the decades, there'd been a couple of points where there's sort of been a meeting of the minds to say, let's resolve overlaps and so forth between the different associations. Mm-hmm. So CMA was in the process of, absorbed under NCA and then basically disbanded, and other opportunities for cocoa research were brought up, and WCF and so on. That, as a research committee, then sort of went its own way for specialism in terms of research on cocoa in the field. NCA's research went through a similar decline, if you will, in terms of what is really the mission of it. And NCA actually recognized what PMCA was doing, such that when NCA decided to essentially discontinue their research committee, I think it was the funding that was left over in the bank balance for it, they donated that to PMCA's research.
Wow.
As a one-time donation. And so that was a consolidation and pooling of resources there, which was an expression to say, as an industry, we still value the research. We don't want to have three different outfits all essentially trying to do the same thing.
And not only that, we recognize our particular strengths, where they lie, and how we can utilize those.
There are two things that NCA was trying to focus on. One was the All Candy Expo, and the other is the political lobbying, if you will. Those were the core tasks that NCA was trying to focus on. NCA's mission in general, PMCA's mission has always been towards the operations and technical side of things as opposed to the sales.
Right.
Right.
One has to wonder, considering the current environment, if we aren't due for another reevaluation of organizational strategy among everybody to, again, utilize what our particular strengths are with regard to perhaps education, research, sales and marketing kind of thing.
Well, as you know from, you know, all the input that I've given over the years in PMCA, I feel very similarly. The danger that PMCA in general faced was being perceived as an annual event and nothing more than that. Whereas the real value is as a 24/7 community.
Yes.
And that's why you've seen a lot of emphasis in PMCA to, you know, the virtual aspect of how PMCA can contribute.
Right,
and be a resource. And I think that spills over into the research mission as well, as being a resource to tap into as much as anything else. There's a hypothesis that when I was research chairman, I sort of had a guiding hypothesis to say there's inherent value in PMCA running a research program, in as much as when you consider the cost of sponsoring research and accessing the latest research, you don't want it to be that only the big companies have the opportunity to do that, because, you know, it's a daunting cost to sponsor a research project at a university. Nowadays, you're talking well over $100,000 for a project. In the late 90s, it was still a substantial whack. And you've got to think, it bears more direct research in terms of market research with members of PMCA. But there's an awful lot of middle and small and family-sized companies that probably have an interest in research, but they never even think of doing it because it's just totally out of their budget.
Well, not only that, I would expand on that and say a lot of those companies, and they're my customers, don't even recognize the research that's valuable until they see it and go, holy cow, that's useful to me. I think the committee and the organization as a whole is going a long way to be inclusive. I mean, as long as I've been a member, we've always been application realism driven and inclusive to any angle of the confectionery industry.
Yeah. If you go back into the history of PMCA, when I was researching for the Centennial book, it became apparent that in the 1910s and 1920s in particular, PMCA was a way for small companies to pool their resources, and they were able to get, basically, they were able to purchase and make available to members things like analytical chemistry services by pooling their resources and basically having a contract with local labs for that, as well as collective shopping for insurance for their businesses. And so that sort of suggested to me the model, basically, of if you're a small outfit, there's value in joining an association that can get you collective bargaining, if you will, to access things that are useful to you that otherwise you probably wouldn't participate in because of their cost. And I thought research might be one of those. But of course, that's a hypothesis, never really tested that out, but it's probably worth looking into.
That is interesting. Of course, it's not a research committee angle, but I'm sure anybody listening to this podcast would take that and run with it, I would hope. We all kind of have our hands full at the moment. So let me get back to your tenures. Can you guys identify any outstanding research that you can think of during that time? Or when I ask a question like that, I reflect on what I'm doing and I recall most of it, but I feel like I spend so much time managing the small stuff, the, you know, committee meetings and things like that, that I don't focus unless it's a particularly interesting topic to me or my industry.
One of the research programs that I recall was in the early 1980s. Doug Manning was doing some work on cocoa butter crystallization and growing crystals in controlled atmospheres, as well as doing some work with electron microscopy and light microscopy to identify, you know, exactly what was going on during crystallization. And he came up with some, you know, spectacular images, if nothing else. They were very beautiful. He was also able to identify chemically what the, you know, the triglyceride structures were.
Right.
I thought that was fascinating research.
In fact, we followed up on that research with a later project that was looking at modeling the rate of crystallization under different circumstances. And so that also was good work. I would point to some extensive work that we did on the modeling of the mechanisms for progression of bloom. I think it pulled together a lot of disparate learnings that were occurring in multiple places around the world, as well as some original research that gave us a big leg up in terms of being able to predict the rate of growth of bloom and understand why it was happening and what you could do to try and inhibit it. There was also some good work we did on caramel stickiness that we had done at NC State. And I'm sure there's several other things that I ought to be remembering. But a couple of things that stand out as well for me was because we experimented with a new generation of how to do the PMCA symposium, if you will.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And so instead of it, the model of having research committee members present the work that they'd been involved with wasn't feasible anymore. And so we got together with Penn State to put together a couple of symposia that deliberately brought in lecturers from around the world who were doing leading edge research on topics of interest. Those were actually, they were very expensive to produce, which is why we didn't do them every year. The publications, the proceedings for those, I think are still worth looking at. I remember sitting through the presentations and, you know, and we were looking at, you know, the application of fractals in fat crystallization as well as some very deep insight into gums and thickeners in non-chocolate candies and so forth. So we covered a range of topics, but it was people who were at the forefront of what our latest knowledge was in that area. I remember sitting in the audience and thinking, you know, I thought I knew about this topic area, but I'm learning a lot more just by being here. And that's why they were well attended as well. But like I say, it was an expensive model.
But we also had lots of practical applications as well.
Yeah. Well, we did. And the practical application was another one where we tried to experiment with the notion of doing the technical review. And we wanted the technical review not to just to be a literature survey, but to be a review that would take into account the latest in the literature and what had happened over the years in the literature, but to highlight what the latest thinking was for that topic. And to put it in a way that you could translate what people were researching at the forefront of research and put that into layman's terms so that your average person in a member company could get the gist of what was being learned in the latest research in that area.
If I remember correctly, we also had an eye on that as for potential future research projects.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were looking at it also as kind of a preparatory stage to say, what out of this area then means what should we focus on as a
right.
research project? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I think we learned from that was that to make it a side project for a student didn't really do justice to the vision as to what we had in mind for that as a technical.
I know what you mean.
I mean, you know, no criticism of the student.
No.
But they didn't have the exposure prior to reading the literature to really understand how the parts fit together. And it's almost like something that you need to get either a consultant to pull together or something like that. It may still be a valuable thing to look into. The remit of it is a little too broad for what a student can get accomplished.
Right.
Okay. So if all you want is just a plain literature review, I think a student's great for that.
Right.
Especially a student coached by their faculty. If you want the other aspects of it, the kind of the broad perspective as to this is how the industry sees the topic, you kind of need to have an industry-based author.
with regard to topics, how did you guys determine the projects back then? What was the mode of identification? You know, because as it's evolved, obviously, you know, we get these requests for proposal, and then we solicit, you know, whatever comes in and then evaluate them all.
I think most of what went on when I was involved was the university professors would make the suggestions and we'd get two or three and the committee would evaluate them and then pick one. But it was, I think, much more driven by what the professors wanted to do and what their interest was. You know, what unanswered questions were raised in the previous project. And that's why we had so many iterations, so many students studying cocoa butter crystallization. I think it was an interesting topic. It was important to the industry, but it was also in the wheelhouse of the university at Penn State. Their expertise in lipid chemistry was very broad. And so cocoa butter crystallization was just a topic that was ideally suited for them to continue to work on and answer all the new questions that were generated by, you know, the previous research.
Can I ask a question, Doug? Because when I came into the research committee, one of the projects that was on the go was a study of the influence of forewarming of milk on the subsequent properties in caramel. How did that, as an example, how did that project come about?
Boy, I wish I could answer that question, Adrian.
Long time ago.
I don't have any idea.
Because that was at Guelph.
Was that at Guelph? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was at Guelph. That came about because of Daryl Medcalf's association with the University of Guelph. Mm-hmm. And what one thing led to another, and we started that project. But to be honest with you,
well, I think that's a significant thing, though. I mean, it's personal contacts are very important on things getting established in that way. The reboot at the end of the 90s, we were conscious that we're sort of starting from scratch in a way. And so we developed an RFP where we said, okay, what kinds of research are we interested in? And at that time we said, you know, we don't want to get embroiled in what happens if it's too applied and there's IP comes out with it. We don't want to get embroiled in a legal argument between the university, PMCA, and member companies as to who owns what in terms of IP arising from the research project, whether it be a patent or what have you.
We try to keep it as generic as possible.
Well, and that's why we basically said there's a list of topics that we're interested in, and we're deliberately looking for stuff that is fundamental research, right?
Yep. Yep.
Something that is of general use to everybody. But of course, when you do that, there's a lot of people in member companies that think, well, it's not applied enough. Why should I be interested in it if it's not applied? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure how you wrestle with that. That is something that does need to be addressed, though. But we used the RFP. We were also very conscious to say, we don't want to keep just going back to our favorites of Penn State and Wisconsin.
You know, I was going to ask you that question, how the academic institutions evolved over the years, because ever since I've been involved in like the early 2000s, it's always been Penn State, Wisconsin, Drexel. Once in a while, you see Utah, DelVal, or NC State, but was it always like that?
It had a danger of being like that, and we tried to work hard to make sure that the RFP went out to a broad set of institutions.
Oh, we sent them out to, I want to say, Brady can correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, 50 plus schools.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's by design nowadays. But, you know, at the end of the 90s, we thought we were being quite broad if we sent it to a dozen. So we had significant interactions with, you know, UC Davis and more recently Ryerson. So don't forget the Canadian ones, Guelph and Ryerson and so on.
Yeah, I was going to say, I recall Guelph did quite a bit of stuff back in the day before I was in Guelph.
In an effort to try and get some international aspect in.
Cachet, yeah. Yep.
We also did some work with LFRA, the Food Research Association,
right,
in the UK.
Motherhead, right.
Which was what had become of what originally was the BF Myra. And LFRA do research on a membership basis, but there were some things that we worked out with them. We had them come and present at production conference, and I think we did at least one research project with them. Yeah,
we did. I remember working on that.
Structural studies one.
Yep.
Because that's another thing as well. Once you learn kind of the centers of excellence, LFRA had a very good structural studies unit, whereas UC Davis were very good at some advanced MRI techniques. It becomes that you learn where centers of excellence are and you think, oh, that might be good for a certain project. So we tried to, in sending out the RFP, we deliberately phrased it to say, here's some general areas that we might be interested in, but also please feel free to propose what you think we should be interested in.
Right, right.
To the professors, and they were usually more comfortable proposing something that they thought we should be interested in. But obviously, subliminally, we'd already sent the message as to the kinds of things that we would be considering.
I had one comment based on the universities that we worked with, and I think the original emphasis of Penn State and Drexel probably came from the original connotation of what PMCA was as the Pennsylvania Manufacturing Confectioners Association.
That's
and Lehigh and FNM as well.
That is a fair point, yeah. Yeah. And when Rudolf Kruckel set up the research program in, what was it, 1947, alongside when Hans Dressel was setting up the production conference, I think at that time, wasn't everything exclusively at Lehigh?
Yes.
All of the research was exclusively at Lehigh.
Yes. Yep, they had a laboratory there, and that's where Bill Duck did his work. So.
Wow.
So, talking about funding, was it always an issue? I mean, as we move along, it seems like the more money you have to spend, the more interest, obviously, you're going to get from institutions. But is what we spend enough? Do we allocate it appropriately? I mean, these are probably, you know, really sensitive questions. But, you know, where I sit, I'm trying to figure out the happy medium to what we can afford, you know, what we're willing to pay, and what kind of work we get done for that.
It's always been an issue. The university's always said that's not enough to make it worthwhile doing. And we always said that's more than we can afford. So,
interestingly, I got that same feedback from the advisors we interviewed in the initial podcast.
Yep.
I mean, some faculty are quite skilled at saying, okay, we'll do this project for PMCA and that will cover whatever 60% of what we need. And then I got a USDA grant that will come in on this, and we'll fill up the rest from other grants. And those that are able to do that, it takes a lot of work on their part, but they're able to pull together a successful project. But it would be nice if we could, you know, at least be the top dog in terms of the funding of a project. And also remember you know, faculty are under pressure from the administrators in their university as well for things like covering F&A costs as well. And so if they've got a project that isn't paying for F&A, they're under pressure from their administrators as to, well, how are you going to cover that? It's just the way that university research is administered. The Office of Sponsored Research in any given university, they've got a model that they want to follow. And when we come along and we try and do something that doesn't fit that model, it usually winds up as a pain in the neck for the professor.
Yep. I'm going to pivot just a little bit here. We've done some recent surveys, and to some extent, they suggest that some memberships see diminishing value in the programs. Has it been difficult to justify the monetary amount we disperse through various programs that seem to benefit just a few?
That's an age-old problem.
Okay.
The companies who are largest are usually more willing to spend, you know, the kinds of monies that we're talking about, which are modest in general.
Right.
But the real small folks look at that as a pretty significant investment and have the attitude, what am I getting out of this immediately? And usually it's not directly applicable. It's basic research and therefore needs to be incorporated into a larger program and fleshed out. So yeah, it's always difficult to justify doing research to really small companies who don't get anything out of it immediately.
I think the other aspect of that is the smaller the company, the less acutely you discern the connection to learning more about an area and being able to apply it immediately. So we found that as well in all the efforts that we've done, where we've every time we go out to try and survey what topics would you like to see researched, you basically get two kinds of answer back. One is the old standards, the generic stuff, you know,
right,
which we've already been researching. And then the other is from such and such an ingredient supplier who wants to see a research project that essentially shows why their kind of ingredient needs to be used.
Yeah. Yep.
So being adamant to not have commercial bias in PMC activities, particularly on research, that kind of a project is a little more difficult to pursue. And so we never really cracked the nut, because I think researching something is something that you do in order to have a body of knowledge available at some point in the future. If you're in a small to medium-sized company where you don't even have enough time to think about your current operation, you're not thinking about what knowledge am I going to want to have in the future, right? And so unless it's an emergency that you need to tap into right now, you tend to not even, it's not even on your radar as to what you want to have researched. That is one of the difficulties that I think in terms of A, identifying the topics, and B, making sure that companies feel that connection to the value of the research.
So how, in your opinion, can we recalibrate that opinion and reflect the benefit of research? I guess at this point, I want to throw a plug in. Anybody listening, if you get a survey from PMCA, please, please respond and take it seriously, because we are listening and it does mean a lot to us to get that feedback. But in your opinion, is there any way we can calibrate that opinion to reflect the benefit of the research?
I think there's two approaches that are probably worth pursuing. One is this idea of, as a company, if I pool resources with other companies like me, we can actually get something that I can find useful. And I think the more we can kind of pursue that aspect through the research committee, it's a way of pooling resources. And especially if you participate on the research committee, because that's where it kind of starts as well in terms of seeing the value. If you participate on the research committee, you are exposed to the considerations and the discussions, as well as firsthand the results as they come up. And I think that's a good part of it. The second thing that I think is worth pursuing is this notion of, whether it be a matching contribution from PMCA, or is there something that I can initiate? My association with PMCA's research enables that and makes it possible. So whether that be some of the other ideas that were talked about recently, perhaps bringing in an intern student specifically to work on a research project at the company, or some kind of sabbatical for the summer or something like that. Things that cause that interaction with the research that's going on, so that there's a sense of ownership to it as well. And maybe PMCA's role is just to kind of broker that, or maybe provide matching funds or something like that. The caveat obviously has to be that it needs to have a product that is shareable at the end.
Right. Doug, any thoughts?
No, I struggled with how to recalibrate the program several times. And I don't know, I think we did okay, but I don't think we, you know, kind of hit it out of the park in terms of how to do that. I liked some of the ideas Adrian had. Specifically, I liked the idea of trying to get more people involved with PMCA Research Committee and trying to expose them to the process as well as the interaction. I learned more from the discussions that were held around the table and after the meeting on the car rides home. I learned quite a bit just from being present.
If you go to the tagline for PMCA, learn, connect, and grow,
yep,
that also applies within the context of the research program. You know, obviously the learning is there, but the connections that Doug's referring to, you do make connections with other members with that have a like interest. You make connections with suppliers that are interested in helping that need. And your connections with the universities as well, but also the connections with the students is very important.
And we've always had, I mean, since I've been involved, such an incredibly varied group of people coming through the committee from everywhere. I mean, from universities to corporations to small organizations to, you know, specialty suppliers. I mean, just a really interesting array of technical expertise just at the research committee level.
Yeah.
Well, whatever you can do to expand that involvement, the connections, as Adrian says, are almost invaluable.
I don't know if it necessarily applies at the undergraduate student level, but certainly the graduate student. If a graduate student is undertaking a project and some of that project can be done at the facility of a member company as part of their research, then that's got to be a win-win.
Yep.
Perhaps PMCA research can be kind of a broker in facilitating that as a process.
Yeah, we've done that in the past. I recall Penn State sent students to the original Hershey plant. We've made chocolate and then provided samples for them to do their conching research. Turned out that those students really learned a lot from that experience. It was quite valuable.
Speaking of expansion and inclusiveness, any thoughts on expanding PMCA's sphere from confectionery candy into dairy, bakery, beverage, snacks, etc.? I've been trying to open up to those particular applications because it just seems like everything's, the lines are just getting so blurred.
They are very blurred. Certainly throughout my career at Hershey, I had the opportunity to work on a variety of snack, you know, cookies and cakes and ice cream toppings and drink boxes. So even at Hershey, we continue to tinker with the snack industry and try to expand into the snack industry. So it would make sense that PMCA try to take baby steps towards that direction. But there are so many industry organizations, you know, all of those other entities that you spoke of, you know, snacks and dairy, all have their own industry organizations that are doing things. Affiliating with them in some way or partnering in some way, trying to find the connections would make some sense.
I think it's also a good conversation to have with, you know, who is it, like AIB and so forth in the baking industry, to find out what do they have that is the equivalent and what issues are they facing in terms of them having a research program for their industry association, and are there opportunities by joining forces to kind of get the best of both worlds?
So in light of the current situation, how do you see PMCA as well as other organizations and comparatively evolving and adapting? Given your wealth of experience in the industry and with PMCA, where do you see us going? I mean, what are your feelings on that subtopic?
So if you'll recall, in the latest long-range plan for PMCA, there's a theme in there that is basically around leveraging what was referred to as the pantry of learning resources that PMCA has accumulated, various assets that range from production conference proceedings to short course materials, to all the research reports and more. I think one of the keys is going to be the efforts that leverage that and make that available as a member benefit in terms of accessing that full spectrum of learning pantry assets. And then the research program can have a prime role in helping to make sure that that as a collection, as a portfolio of learning assets, is constantly updated and added to with the latest research, as well as expanding the scope, like you say, in terms of bringing in, okay, this is the pure confection play of that, but also how does that apply in terms of plant protein nutrition bars? How does that apply in terms of baked items and so forth, and bringing that in as well, making those connections? So I see PMCA research as one possible task as being kind of a co-steward of the pantry of learning resources that is an asset that is one of the benefits of joining PMCA.
Since you mentioned LRP, I'm going to wrap this up with a question to you, Adrian. We're currently searching for an LRP chair. Can you elaborate on your duties as long-range planning chair and what somebody might be tasked with should they jump that situation?
So long-range planning is a great opportunity to kind of provide the platform for the president and chairman and vice president of PMCA in order to identify the vision of the association and programs that are going to propel PMCA to its next generation. And you will see various things that we've done over the years, from things like restructuring how PMCA is financed to launching a student outreach program. All are things that have come out of long-range planning. So what happens is about every 5 years, there is a deep dive where leadership all over PMCA, not just at the board level, but also representatives of all of the committees and so forth, get together. And there's a structured planning workshop that we do over a couple of days to basically examine and deep dive what are the issues, what's the situation, where is the industry going, what are the needs, what's our fundamental value proposition, et cetera, et cetera. And identify, therefore, what do we need to put in place over the next few years in order to assure that we stay relevant and vital. As a committee, long-range planning kind of organizes and does that. As chair of long-range planning, you're basically coordinating that committee on those efforts. And then on an ongoing basis, maybe a couple of times a year, there's a committee meeting to basically monitor where are we with implementing this particular program? Are there some ways that it needs to be reshaped as we've learned more? And so there's an ongoing tuning that goes on. So really, as a long-range planning committee chair, you're essentially committing to about three or four meetings a year. And then every 5 years, organizing this planning process in-depth workshop. And that's really what's involved. It's been a vital part of PMCA's progression over the years and the evolution of PMCA and what makes PMCA strong. It's also a good way to have an interaction with the depth and breadth across PMCA so that you're not only exposed to the production conference, you're not only exposed to the short courses. It's really a good general management box to tick as well. This volunteer leadership is something that people feature on their resumes these days, but that is a good indicator of the fact that it supplements the kinds of leadership experience that you're getting within your own company. And when you can demonstrate that you've had this kind of leadership across the industry association, that's another feather in your cap. It's building you as a leader and it's rounding you out as well as making contacts across the industry. So is that sufficient pitch, Eric?
That is an awesome pitch, Adrian, tying it to reality as well. You know what I mean? From volunteers into your current situation. Like I said, I got to wrap this up. Is there anything I missed that you guys wanted to jump on before we wrap this up?
I'm glad that you're putting together these podcasts and so forth. I think it's a great way of people hearing what people have been through the mill have to say. Hopefully it inspires people to continue to learn, connect and grow and just get involved. You know, that's the main message. Get involved and make this be something that brings value to you and your company.
That's always been my motto.
Personal brand, but your company as well.
Yep. Continue to keep the emphasis on bringing qualified students as potential employees. I feel very strongly that the organization grows because we bring on very talented individuals and bring them into our fold, because the confection industry is unique and a fun place to work. It's a inclusive community and does allow us to connect and grow.
I'm glad you said that, because I mean, you guys know I'm not an emotional person, but I really felt good interviewing the previous students on their research, because it's nice to see that kind of growth coming back into the industry and their commitment even after they're in the industry. It's just really great.
Yeah, I agree. That was the best reward for giving of my time to PMCA research, was the interaction with students and watching them grow and then seeing them be great contributors to the industry. And it didn't always work out. We didn't, you know, place all of our students in the industry, but we placed a lot of them, and that was quite good.
I'll conclude with a quote from a marketing director I used to work with in the UK, who said the confectionery industry is one of the best ways to have fun with your clothes on.
Very nice. I can't wrap it up better than that. Thank you so much for your time, guys. And we look forward to working with you even more in the future. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Welcome.
This has been another episode of Research Chat. And as usual, we thank you for listening. As you may be aware, April is traditionally conference month, and we have some upcoming events you should check out, from the Beyond the Basics program to a host of individual sessions. You still have time until April 9th to register for the Beyond the Basics Chocolate Centers, Almost Anything You Need to Know. So if you haven't already, get on the website and register. Because of the host of things coming your way, we will be taking a short break from the podcast, but rest assured, we will be back in May. Feel free to use this time to catch up on our back catalog of podcasts.